While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all our listeners tuning in from every corner of the country and beyond the country, Namibia. Thank you for joining us on Eagle FM, the station where conversations count. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On the Reading News Analysis, your weekday deep dive into the stories shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. It's Wednesday, the 20th of November. Pardon me. It's Wednesday, the 19th of November, 2025, and the time is 5 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. And as we move through the week, we bring you the developments defining our nation, from critical decisions influencing economic growth to the lived experiences of communities across Namibia. Now, right here on the Reading News Analysis, we look beyond the headlines. We examine the context, interrogate the issues, and connect the dots to provide balanced, evidence-based insights into the forces shaping Namibia today and setting the stage for tomorrow. Every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we bring you the country's most important conversations through expert interviews and depth analysis, archive reflections, and your voices, which keep our national dialogue alive. Now, because in an age of rapid information flow, understanding remains our strongest foundation. On today's program, we'll spotlight the major national stories unfolding right now, explore their broader implications, and engage with the people driving policy, innovation, and governance across Namibia. Remember, you can tune in on the reader on all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app straight to your mobile phone, or join in on the conversation on our WhatsApp channel, where we share exclusive clips, insights, and behind-the-scenes moments. Now, wherever you're listening from, your office, your vehicle, or the comfort of your home, stay tuned, stay thoughtful, and stay curious, because right here on the Reading News Analysis, Namibia doesn't just listen, Namibia comes to think. Let's get right into what's on our agenda this afternoon. The Agro Marketing and Trade Agency, also known as AMTER, has reaffirmed its critical role in promoting food security, value addition, and industrialization in Namibia. Speaking at the recent government information sharing session earlier this month, AMTER officials outlined current initiatives, challenges, and future plans aimed at strengthening the country's agricultural sector. AMTER, a specialized agency under the Ministry of Agriculture, Water, and Land Reform, manages the National Strategic Food Reserve and national grain silos, ensuring Namibia maintains emergency reserves of high-grade maize and mahangu. The reserves can be released during national emergencies or supplied to small-scale millers, safeguarding the country against potential food crisis. Now, the agency also operates fresh produce business hubs in Rundu and Ongwediva. These hubs provide critical infrastructure such as cold storage, ripening facilities, trading floors, and value addition centers for sorting, grading, packaging, and processing. Officials highlighted that the hubs reduce dependency on foreign markets and intermediaries, while creating jobs, transferring skills, and improving nutritional access. Now, AMTER manages the Katuki Milling Plant in Kavango West, which processes local maize and mahangu into flour and maize meal under the Golden Fresh brand. Now, plans are underway to expand agro-processing infrastructure near its hubs, including pack houses for horticulture produce, such as tomatoes, carrots, butternut, and cabbage. These facilities aim to reduce post-harvest losses, diversifying product ranges, and increase competitiveness in local and international markets. And now let's take a listen to Acting Manager, Marketing and Corporate Communications at AMTER, that is Pasval Elijah.
The Agro Marketing and Trade Agency, AMTER, was established in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Then under the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry. Well, now we have the aspect of fisheries and land reform. So we were established to manage the National Strategic Food Reserves,
mm-hmm.
which are commonly known as the silos, as well as manage the fresh produce business hubs.
Mm-hmm.
So in this sense is that the Agro-Marketing and Trade Agency, AMTA, was basically established to ensure or to become the middleman between our producers, the local farmers,
mm-hmm.
as well as the consumers. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is just to assist our local farmers, ensure that what is produced locally eventually gets to reach the market.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we then get to do this? The Agro-Marketing and Trade Agency currently manages five strategic food reserves, they're commonly known as silos. We have in Katima Mulilo,
mm-hmm.
which is the biggest in terms of holding capacity or storage capacity. We also have in Nundu. We have one in Omuthia, Okongo, and Tsandi.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we get to store the grain that we get to market, which is mostly the white maize, as well as the pearl millet, which is known as the mahangu.
Mm-hmm.
So we buy from our local farmers, we store what we reserve, and then release in times of need.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, AMTA would then buy these grain products from our farmers, store the products, and then release only when there is a need. Or we'll say there's been drought in the country. Through the Office of the Prime Minister, we get to release and supply wherever there is a need. However, over the years, also in terms of our sustainability,
mm.
as well as maintaining the quality of these products, we add now value to this grain product, such that we opened or established a milling facility in the Kavango West at Katutu Settlement, that these grain products that we buy from our farmers, we mill and eventually get to supply or sell the finished product in the white maize,
mm-hmm.
or the mahangu flour itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in the aspect of the National Strategic Food Reserves, we have three of them countrywide. We have in Rundu, mm-hmm. in the Kavango East. We also have in the Oshana region in Ongwediva, as well as here in Venduk, where our head office is. But one aspect that I would like to highlight here in terms of the fresh produce business hubs is that this is one message we usually take to our farmers, stakeholders, to say, despite us having these three centers, it should not be a barrier or a limiting factor to you as a producer, because the agro-marketing will be able to reach to you as a farmer or as a producer. Mm-hmm. So wherever you find yourself in the country, AMTA is able to get to these farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get to do this? Through these fresh produce business hubs, this is where we get to buy the horticultural products, vegetables, fruits from our local farmers, and then we market and trade at these facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So in a nutshell, this is who AMTA is, who we are. And in addition to that is that the fresh produce business hubs were established such that we provide in terms of trading flows, as well as called storage facilities, because you will agree with me that it's been a prolonged issues where back in the days, farmers will bring in their products and where they struggle to say, how do they get to sell their product?
Mm.
However, with these facilities being in place, AMTA is able to store these products, and they get now to have a prolonged life shell of these products, in a way you get to have products being on our shelves for a longer period, as of opposed to having these products being spoiled and not reaching the market with the proper quality that the market requires.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Fresh produce business hubs, where AMTA would buy from our local farmers. Back in the days, before the changing of the operational model was that AMTA would buy these products from the local farmers. So once they get to buy, would take up products from the local farmers,
mm-hmm.
store, and then wait for a market. In cases where there is no market, it would be then a loss both on the farmers as well as the agency itself.
Mm-hmm.
However, AMTA has changed this operation in terms of saying we should not now have this as a burden on our farmers. So what AMTA does now is that we buy the products from the farmers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer a thing of you bringing your products. If now there's been wastage or loss, it then becomes you as a farmer's loss. So we buy directly from the farmers, then we find a market and we sell wherever it is now available. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is how we have changed in terms of our operation. So just to give assurance to the farmers to say that your part is just to produce.
Okay.
When you're done producing, we will take up the products and we will eventually sell wherever the market is available. And also, first thing first is that as a producer or as a farmer, is that you need to be registered by the Namibian Agronomic Board. Mm-hmm. This is just for us to be able to know that we are actually working with our local farmers. So it's a way of us recognizing that these are our Namibian farmers that we are supporting and eventually, you know, contribute to the Namibian economy through these farmers. So you as a farmer, you need to be registered. At first, once you've registered with the Namibian farmers, it's two ways that we can, Namibian Agronomic Board, it's two ways that you can get to supply us these products. Mm-hmm. One is that, you know, we don't want to strain our farmers. Mm-hmm. We do not want to, we know these are busy people and we want them to just produce and supply the product. So how you can get to supply us these products is that we can either enter into a contract with you as a farmer. So the contract is simple as such, is that the contract will tell us the quantities of the products that you'll be supplying us, how often, and us having a standing contract is that it's easier with us as AMTA, as well as now the operation team, to say they get to keep stock of what is it that you'll be supplying us in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say you have readily available products and you are struggling with the market. All you need to do is just bring the sample to AMTA, and if we are happy with the standard or the quality of the product, we will eventually take up the product and then sell. So simple as such. Now, in terms of the value addition in agro-processing, so I have highlighted one aspect in terms of the NSFR, where we have a milling facility in the Kavango West Katwitu settlement. This is where we add value on the grain products. We mill and eventually sell it in a finished product as white maize meal or the mahango flour. And additionally, in terms of our horticultural products, you will agree with me that over the past years, we've recorded incidents or cases where products are produced. However, they get to... there's so much that is produced and then goes to waste. Yes. And such of these products, you look at the tomatoes, you look at the cabbages, quite a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So what AMTA has done is that, as opposed to these products now going into waste, why not add value to the product?
Mm-hmm.
So we've come up with an initiative to add value to this product, and a number of the prototypes have been identified. And so since the beginning of July, the Agro Marketing and Trade Agency announced its prototypes, the products that we have been, taking to the stakeholders, to our customers and the farmers themselves to say these are the prototypes that we would want to introduce to the markets from the products that we buy from our local farmers. For example, as opposed to, I'll give an example of the tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to us now buying the tomatoes as they are and sell them exactly in a raw form as we got them from our farmers. So what AMTA is doing is that we are now adding value to this tomato. So we come up with either a tomato paste or the tomato sauce or the tomato jam.
Now by adding value locally, AMTA aims to stimulate economic activity, create jobs, transfer technology, and improve Namibia's trade balance by reducing imports and increasing process exports. Now, the agency continues to enforce quality and food safety standards, ensuring that both raw and processed produce meet national and export requirements. Collaboration with farmers, millers, and other stakeholders remains central to aligning production, storage, processing, and distribution. The government and AMTA hope that expanding agro-processing and value addition infrastructure will strengthen Namibia's food security, reduce post-harvest losses, increase employment, and support inclusive growth, ensuring the agricultural sector continues to contribute meaningfully to the national economy. Let's continue listening to Elijah from the AMTA.
So this is just a way of, encouraging our farmers to say, when you have produced your products, you have already a secured market. And this secured market is that we will not also just sell the products in the raw forms as they were or how we got from the farmers, but it means that we will also add value to the products and sell these products, because these products are what we eat every day in our houses. Mm-hmm. And definitely there is demand. If there is demand, it means that we need to do it locally. Mm-hmm. And I can give an example of the fishing industry. These are people that are always on sea, and most of the products that they get to eat is products that are already processed and prepared. So why not target these markets and ensure that of the products that we are getting from our farmers actually get to reach this market? Mm-hmm. So this is the whole idea. Additionally, from the tomato press and the tomato jams and others, is the our indigenous products such as the melons. So we are also producing, prototyping the melon to say you can also get your Kalahari jam. So AMTA has entered, through this initiative, we have entered into an agreement or a memorandum of understanding with Essential Foods, such that we are able now to, upscale this value addition to roll out. So we are not yet selling this product. So what we have been doing for the past few months is that we've been allowing the public have a taste of these products, mm-hmm. and with the instant and positive feedback that we will get from our farmers, I tell you, Madam Grace, we will be able to sell these products or have them on our shelves. And I can tell you that from a few engagements that we've had so far, the positive seems to be quite mm-hmm. positive, and the public is, welcoming the initiative. And in addition to our value addition, AMTA also launched its water. So we are also into, this is the diversification part that comes in. So AMTA is also now selling or is bottling its purified water. So we do have our machinery by our head office here in Ifenduk at Lafens. So we bottle ourselves and then we get to sell. So you can also, when you make a tin at our Ifenduk hub, is that you can also buy your products. Not only are you going to buy your fresh products or your vegetables, fruits and all that, but you can also get to buy your water. You bring your empty bottle, you can refill, or you can already buy the bottled water. And this water is available at all our fresh produce business hubs. So if you go to Rundu, you go to Wangwediwa, you will be able to have a taste of our water. So these are just quite some of the initiatives that AMTA has implemented. And, we look forward to this value addition. And you will agree with me that of late, even Her Excellency herself, agriculture is one of key priority areas that they would want to, ensure that it is invested accordingly. And AMTA is also just trying to also, maintain the same pace. So, taking cognizance that we only have facilities in these areas that I have highlighted, and GAM is within the Oshodi-Dunjupa region?
Correct.
Yeah. So, what happens is that we work closely with the Ministry of Agriculture, such that they can always visit the agricultural extension offices, right? So in terms of you being registered as a farmer, is that you register through the Namibian Agronomic Board, who are the regulators. So the Namibian Agronomic Board is that their registration is accessible. We live in a digital era. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't want to limit our farmers or our producers. Mm-hmm. So what happens here is that as far as GAM or wherever you find yourself, provided you have access to your smartphone, is that you can do your registration online. Mm-hmm. The registration as being a producer with the Namibian Agronomic Board, you can just visit the website, you download the registration form, and then off you do. So the registration is free of charge. There is no amount attached to it. Mm-hmm. So once you've been registered, then AMTA will take it up with you. This is where the requirements or the two highlighted requirements in terms of you supplying a product comes in. So by then it means you have been recognized as a producer. And when you are doing the registration, it will also indicate, or you will indicate, the type of product that you will be supplying in terms of what you are farming. So when you've done that, we are definitely ready to do business with the farmers. In a sector that we find ourselves is that we do have partners that we work closely with, and also in terms of now us AMTA internally, we do have a division that is solely responsible in ensuring that we get to sell or trade or market what is required in the market. So in that sense is that, remember I indicated from the beginning that we do have operations officer. So the whole idea of us now being involved from the production stage is that we should be able in the end to harvest or sell products that will be able to attract premium, you know, quality. Mm-hmm. So what we are doing here is that the internal stakeholders or the staff that are responsible with standards will ensure that once you bring your products within AMTA, we'll be able to see if the product really or does meet the requirements. And also having said that we have a division that does in terms of assisting our farmers is that when we have, say, for example, Madam Grace mm-hmm. is a producer from GAM, and they have noted their interest in marketing their products through AMTA. Mm-hmm. So from the onset, from the production stage itself, maybe Madam Grace is also not too sure to say what is it that is in demand mm-hmm. currently, what products can one venture into. So we'll be able to assist you to say, perhaps look into this type of products, and these are the type of seeds one can you know, also make use of, mm-hmm. so that you also are sure that in the end, the product that you are going to get is what is required also in the market. So in that process, we are both as AMTA and the farmer assured that our product that will be harvested will reach the customers, and customers will be happy mm-hmm. in terms of quality. And also we have different stakeholders that get to do you know, quantifying or qualifying these products, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, the regulator themselves, the Namibian Agronomic Board. So the products that we get to market is, you know, certified and qualified as good products that gets to go to the market. So in a nutshell, this is how the process works. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, if I can also just add on to that, is that, you know, we find farmers, because they are into different areas across the country, and AMTA, with its logistical facilities, we are able to ensure that should you not or indicate that you are not able to supply or bring, the products to AMTA, we will be able to pick up mm-hmm. or collect these products from your farms to ensure that this product still gets to reach ourselves in the quality that we would still want, and also still have, you know, a lifelong shelf on our shelves for marketing and trading.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about job creation. How does AMTA's work in value addition to contribute to job creation, food security, and economic diversification in Namibia?
That's a good one. So we speak about food security, and I will tell you that where we are currently, we still depend on outside, because most of our products we still, we still import. Mm-hmm. And but we would want to change the status quo. And of course, it's mm-hmm. a collective effort, mm-hmm. not from AMTA alone, but, you know, within the whole industry or the sector itself. So with that being said, when we are now adding the venture that we are now going into, when we add value into these products, first things first is that we are assuring our farmers, right? We are assuring these farmers that they will get their market. So what do they need to do? It means they need to produce more. As opposed to me now, previously I would perhaps just supply to AMTA one crate of tomato or green pepper. If I know that there is a secured market, it means I will now expand my farm. Mm-hmm. Once I have expanded my farm, I will also produce more. So what are we doing in that sense? AMTA now getting to buy these products from the farmers, it means that now their income has eventually upscaled. It has increased from what they would sale previously, it has grown. So this is what you are doing. You are providing food for them, you are providing an income, mm-hmm. and eventually, you know, having this job creation. Additionally, in the value addition is that the job creation, what we are doing is that we also get to employ people that will be responsible with adding value to these products. So this is also one aspect that now contributes to the Namibian economy, because you have not only improved the livelihood of this farmer who's down there, mm-hmm. but you are also ensuring that in the end, they also get to grow. Not only will they be small-scale halter farmers, they will also become the commercial farmers of the future. So this in doing the processing or as adding value to these products, it means that we are giving assurance to the farmers. We are, you know, promoting or encouraging more production locally. And when we've done that, it means that we will do our work with importing. Mm. Then the money circulates within our local economy as opposed to us now taking the money elsewhere.
Correct. Mm. Mm-hmm. As we are nearing the end of our conversation, what challenges does AMTA face in terms of marketing and trading of agricultural products?
Like any other, of course, the first aspect is in terms of a financial resource. Obviously, financial resources are always limited because there is so much that one would want to do. However, with finances, you are limited. Mm-hmm. This also now comes in terms of now uptaking everything, say what is in the market. And I would like to indicate that in terms of some of the challenges that we face with our local products is that, you know, with our farmers, when Pasval is farming tomatoes mm-hmm. or cabbages, Grace will also be doing the same.
Exactly.
So eventually the market becomes flooded with the same product. Mm-hmm. So when the market becomes flooded with the same product, it then becomes difficult to say, how then do we get to market these products? Mm-hmm. So what we encourage our farmers is that they should at least have, or we should have at least cropping calendars. When you know that farmer A is into tomatoes, mm-hmm. see what other products one can do so that it's a, you know, it's a continuation of supplying products, because the inconsistency becomes in, because as opposed to us having tomatoes, cabbages, green pepper or any other product, is that we find ourselves having the same products at the same time. So it becomes difficult for us to supply consistently to wherever we need now to sell the product.
And with that, let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. Nonetheless, let's continue. Now, AMTA has warned that limited agro-processing capacity has led to significant food waste, with small-scale farmers struggling to find markets for surplus harvest. In order to address this, the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform has announced plans to establish 14 new agro-processing facilities nationwide, signaling strong government commitment to agricultural industrialization. Let's take a listen to Elijah from AMTA as she rounds up on this conversation.
Because all the farmers have one product, mm-hmm. and now we can't supply consistently of the same product, of a variety of products that we usually do. Mm-hmm. So this is also one of the challenges that we sit with in terms of the consistency from our farmers in terms of now supplying the product. So if we get to work together collectively to say, okay, fine, if farmer A has this type of product, mm-hmm. farmer B would also have this type of product, it becomes very easier in ensuring that, okay, we have a variety of this products within the market, and also it will not have so much effect in terms of the prices, because if all of the farmers have the same product at the same time, you will see that even the prices also becomes an issue to say, since everybody else has the products and they would want to just let go of these products. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Okay. Looking ahead, Ms. Elijah, what are AMTA's strategic priorities for scaling up value addition and agro-processing, and how do these align with Namibia's national development goals?
Thank you so much. Before I touch base on that question, in my last point, I highlighted the aspect of price,
okay.
and I just thought it's best that I just bring it out to to the stakeholders, because this is one concern that we get most of the times from our farmers, specifically to say AMTA gets to, you know, give them these prices of the products. Mm-hmm. You know, we sit in silos and decide on what type of on the prices that we are selling these products or buying from our farmers. So what happens in terms of our price setting is that we have a regulator, the Namibian Agronomic Board. So through this regulator and the playing partners, which are the farmers' union, the farmers themselves, they get to sit what is in the market and look at what are the inputs or the factors that would then influence the prices. And once they've had these discussions and agree on prices, these prices are then gazetted and then given to all the traders and millers within the country, AMTA included. So prices are not set individually or in silos by AMTA and indicate or give to the farmers, say, these are the prices. But this is an agreed price from the regulator themselves with all the industry or the sector players involved, such that AMTA is also included in making use of the price. So the thing of, or the issue of saying AMTA, you know, gets to set prices in silos and then just give to the farmers does not really exist. So moving to the strategic priorities is that I would like to mention that, you know, agriculture, well, somebody said it's the backbone, mm-hmm. and somebody said it's no longer a backbone, it's our neck, because if you do not have a neck, it means you are gone. Yeah. So what do you need to do? You need to strengthen this sector. Mm-hmm. And us doing that is that it should be a collective effort. And also, let me highlight on that to say what we get to absorb from our local farmers, right, should be able to be supplied to different markets. When I say that, I'm including our OMAS. Mm-hmm. And this is a market that we need to create locally for our products. Because I'll give an example for the Commerce region. If you have farmers within the Commerce region that are producing different types of products, what we are saying is that these products should be able to be consumed within the Commerce region. Mm-hmm. And by so doing, it means that we will not struggle with the market. Because, one, if we have the Ministry of Health, we have hospitals, right? Mm. We have prisons, we have schools. All of these, institutions, they get to eat, they get to consume these products. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to now getting these products elsewhere, why don't we then, you know, absorb collectively through AMTA these products, then we sell or supply wherever there is a need. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to say is that we need stakeholders' support. Stakeholder support is that the OMAS should come on board in ensuring that the products that are locally produced by our farmers should be consumed locally through these different OMAS or this institution before, you know, we can eventually look at different supermarkets and retails to say they should also get to market these, our local products. So for our strategic priority areas is that we are still looking into value addition and agro-processing. The prototypes that have been identified, this is just now minimal of what have been put into place. And we look at upscaling this to say we will still look at more of what products can be, you know, value or added value onto. You also look at the products like our indigenous mangoes. Mm. Mangoes are like, now we are towards that season that these products will now be full in our market. So what do we do with these products? So if now they are not sold as they are, it means most of them just goes to waste. So these are just some of the products that if not added value to, they will go to waste. So some of the products is that we can also now come up with mango juice, also our indigenous maguni from mostly the Kavango regions. Also those are some of the products. And also if I can just highlight this is that in the last financial year, AMTA ran a tender to a feasibility study that will direct into establishing a distribution center in the Zambezi region in Katimamlilo. Mm-hmm. So Zambezi region is also one of the key areas that have been identified to say there's so much potential in terms, yes, of them producing horticultural products. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to them now supplying to the nearest that is in the Kavango region, why not have a distribution center? So it just basically allows them have their products also being marketed through that distribution center. Also, we look at our national strategic food reserve. You know, this is a discussion that we usually have to say our current holding capacity or storage capacity stands only at 22,900 metric ton. So this holding or storage capacity, say now we are struck with a calamity in the country, mm-hmm. will we be able to feed Namibia as a nation? Unfortunately not, because our storage facilities are not, you know, at that capacity to ensure that in the end, should we find ourselves in a situation, see what happened during COVID, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's say now it comes and it's prolonged that we are unable to get anything from outside. It means Namibia will starve as a country. So this is also one key area that the agency has been into discussion and looking into to say, if possible, let's then get to expand our storage facilities to ensure that we do have enough to feed a Namibian child.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And this will be realized when stakeholders come on board?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And also the mother ministry, the mother ministry, of course.
Okay.
Yes.
Ms. Elijah, we have come to
And that is Pasvali Elijah, who was educating us on the role of AMTER towards Namibia's food and agriculture. She is the acting manager, marketing and cooperation communications, Pasval Elijah, at the AMTER, or the Agro Marketing and Trade Agency, which plays a vital role in promoting the consumption of local produce and supporting farmers through an efficient marketing and logistics system. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace you are tuned into on the Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I'll see you after the commercial break.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Reading News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the
eye. Welcome back. Now in other news, the World Health Organization's Regional Office for Africa, that is WHO Afro, has unveiled a new good database designed to revolutionize the collection, management, and use of health information across the continent. Now known as the Afro Geo Database, the platform serves as a centralized digital repository for verified geospatial data. Now it brings together official administrative and political boundaries, population estimates, and the most up-to-date lists of health facilities for all member states in the region. According to the World Health Organization's AFRO, the database addresses a long-standing challenge in many African countries where health data has historically been fragmented, outdated, or inconsistent. Now, by consolidating verified data sets from all participating nations, the Geo database creates a trusted, authoritative source of information for health planning and emergency response. A standout feature of the platform is its interoperability. Now, through APIs, national health information systems, surveillance platforms, and mapping tools can connect directly to the database, allowing planners and responders to access real-time verified data instead of relying on outdated files. Now, to ensure accuracy, the World Health Organization AFRO has appointed GIS focal points in each country, often drawn from health ministries and WHO offices, to update the database with new administrative boundaries, population counts, and health facility lists. Now, the system conducts automotive quality checks, verifying consistency before the data becomes publicly accessible. The Geo database also emphasizes country ownership, as all data is reviewed and validated by national authorities. Now, this ensures the information is both technically accurate and politically recognized, supporting regional harmonization while respecting national sovereignty. Now, practical applications of the system are wide-ranging, such as governments can map areas lacking health facilities and access service coverage, emergency responders can generate detailed maps of affected regions during outbreaks, including nearby health centers, population density, and transportation routes. Also, vertical health programs such as polio eradication, malaria elimination, HIV services, and vaccination campaigns can use the database to improve planning, track field data, and identify underserved community. The World Health Organization AFRO will provide ongoing technical support and training to ensure long-term sustainability. The geodatabase is intended not only as a tool, but as an integrated part of daily health sector decision-making across Africa. The launch of the AFRO geodatabase marks a significant step in strengthening Africa's digital health ecosystem, improving emergency response, enhancing evidence-based planning, and promoting health system surveillance. The World Health Organization emphasizes that accurate, reliable, and up-to-date data will ultimately support better health outcomes. The World Health Organization emphasizes that accurate, reliable, and up-to-date data will ultimately support better health outcomes for millions of people across the continent. Let's now take a commercial break, and we'll be back right after this.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe odite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota enjuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi finawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye. Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota enjuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for Economic Indicators and Trading Economics. US dollar today is equals to 17 Namibian dollars and 21 cents. 1 euro is equals to 19 Namibian dollars and 93 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 58 cents. 1 Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 47 cents. 1 United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 69 cents. 1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 28 cents. And of course, 1 South African rand is a peg to the Namibian dollar. Now, let's go over to trading economics. Serbia's current account deficit narrowed $396 million US dollars in September 2025 from a downwardly revised 618 million Namibian dollar in the same month a year earlier. Now the goods account shortfall decreased to 528 million Namibian dollars from 549 million. Now the goods account shortfall decreased to 528 million US dollars, not Namibian dollars, from 549 million US dollars in September 2024, while the primary income deficit fell to 584 million US dollars. Iran's trade surplus widened to 17.37 million euros in September 2025. That is from 11.56 billion euros in the corresponding month of the previous year. Now, this was the largest surplus since March as exports soared 27.8% year-on-year to 28.5 billion euros, boosted primarily by a 73.6% increase in the medical and pharmaceutical products, which accounted for 65.5% of total exports. Now, shipments to the U.S. surged 126% to 16.3 billion euros, with chemical and related products, including medical and pharmaceutical goods, making up over 90% of exports to that market. Now, the US, the Netherlands, and the Great Britain remained Iran's top export destinations. Meanwhile, imports rose 3.7% year-on-year to 11.13 billion euros, driven mainly by higher purchases of the office machinery and automatic data processing equipment at 61.5%. With partially offset declines in medical and pharmaceutical products. Producer prices in Portugal fell 2.8% year-on-year in October 2025, marking the 10th consecutive decline after a 3.7% drop in September. However, it was the smallest decrease since April, reflecting milder reductions in consumer goods, particularly non-durables, as well as intermediate goods and energy. Prices also rose at a slower pace for durables and investment goods. South Africa's retail trade rose by 3.1% year-on-year in September 2025, accelerating from a downwardly revised 2.2% increase in August, almost in line with analysts' forecast of a 3%. Key contributors included general dealers up 1.9%, textile, clothing, footwear, and leather goods retailers up 4.4%, that is plus 0.7 points, and household furniture, appliances, and equipment retailers up 11.4%, that is plus 0.5 points. Now, on a seasonally adjusted monthly basis, Retail trade was flat in September after a revised 1.6% decrease in the prior month. Retail trade sales rose by 3.6% in the third quarter of 2025 compared with the third quarter of 2024. Now, that's what we have for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. We pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. Now, remember, our studio line is open for you to come through. Opinions and contributions, ask questions right here on the Reader News Analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendike nawa nokumona oijemo ili nawa. Ningefa Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Matatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the Eye. Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijemo ili nawa. Ningefata Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honore Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Matatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the Eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back now for News Beyond the Borders. We're starting off in South Africa. As we always start off regionally, move over to continental news, thereafter bring you international news. Now, the race to access critical minerals in South Africa has intensified.
Critical minerals have been identified as a strategic focus under priority number 4 of South Africa's G20 presidency, with the country coming up with a critical minerals framework described by Minerals and Petroleum Resources Minister Gwede Mantashe as a game changer.
We are committed to the six pillars. Interrelated strategic pillars. Each addressing challenges across the value chain, mapping and exploration. That's where it starts. It all starts there. You do exploration, you discover quality and quantity of mineral anyway. Governance, standards of economic, social, and environmental aspects. When you are told that you must mine responsibly, it's not a punishment.
Mantashe says the continent must move from being primarily an exporter of raw minerals to becoming a key player in value-added production and supply chain integration.
We should never be entering the world as a continent, as individual countries. We are 54 countries. If we go to the world as 54 countries, we are very weak. But if we go there and try to have a uniform approach as a continent, we are very powerful and we can be influential. Actually, our size as a continent is almost about the size of China and India. And they talk to the world as a unit. We want to talk there as splinters, and it doesn't help us. We must unify as Africa, talk together. We are a mining continent, and we must act, our voice must be clear in that area above anybody else. So people must not come and take our critical minerals and go away.
The United Nations UNDP Africa Director Ahuna Ezeakonwa delivered an address on the future potential of critical minerals in shaping economies. She's lauded South Africa's G20 presidency.
South Africa's leadership has been nothing short of resilient, resolved, but also a dedication and a commitment. I mean, if you just look at these three key principles, solidarity, equality, and sustainability, these are at the heart of securing our common humanity. And I really commend South Africa for insisting on this. As the United Nations, we think that it's extremely important for the world to cooperate to address the challenges that we're now all commonly facing.
A panel discussion was held on taking advantage of the global demand for critical minerals.
This is a great moment for us to really set the agenda for the G20, given that critical minerals is one of the priority issues that are being discussed globally, ensuring that this event is a success and that whatever is being discussed here can then be taken into become actionable outcomes of South Africa's G20 presidency and the legacy of our G20.
The conversations will now move to the main summit at the weekend, with Minister Mantashe confident of a declaration on the G20 critical minerals framework. A consensus that the success of the G20 critical minerals framework will create a level playing field, enable fair competition, and support fair trade in pushing for the reindustrialization of the African continent. The United Nations also calling for global solidarity behind the outcomes of South Africa's G20 presidency. I'm Katla Kwalogodi for SABC News in Sandton, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, the Tourism Department of South Africa, in collaboration with the Airports Company of South Africa, have launched a Smart Tourism Visitor Information Center. Interesting.
Department, in collaboration with Airports Company South Africa and several other tourism bodies, are launching a Smart Visitor Information Center at Oratambo International Airport today. This interactive paperless center, we're told, offers real-time information on the country's various cultural and heritage offerings across all 9 provinces. Watching that leg of the story for us is SABC News reporter Calvin Dluja, who joins us from Oratambo International Airport. And Calvin, we spend so much time speaking about the delegates, the heads of states, the business leaders. But of course, this is also an opportunity for South Africa to show off in terms of the very best we have to offer.
Good morning to you and to our SABC viewers at home. Yes, indeed, you are here at the OR Tambo International Airport. What I've noticed when we drove in here is that this airport is very busy. Guests coming in, especially from abroad. As you know, the South Africa will be hosting the G20 summit. So when we spoke to those from the tourism sector, they told SABC News that this is simple. It's just that they want our visitors to know South Africa and they need to know Johannesburg, especially maybe locations they can go and buy your Mohodu, they can go and buy your Manguna, they can enjoy Soweto and some parts of Johannesburg. But Eldrin Sampiam, the spokesperson of the Minister of Tourism, is here with me to elaborate more on this so that we can be able to get more information. Eldrin Sampiam, thank you very much. A long time. I see now you are on the other side of town. Thank you very much for your time. Eldrin, just tell us, what is this in Visitors Information Center about?
Well, so this is a smart visitors information center that the minister is launching today. It's a culmination of all the work that we've been doing as well, and giving what we are saying that when it comes to tourism, we speak about innovation, we speak about technology, and we speak about digital as well. And that's the reason that we have the smart information center that will be launched today by the minister. Interactive screen that will be there as well. You can lodge complaints online and receive responses to your complaints almost immediately. And that's what we're trying to do. But the bigger picture is that when you land, Kelvin, at OR Tambo International Airport, you know, the international arrivals part, and OR Tambo, the statue is greeting you. Right behind you, you'll have that virtual information center. So you'll have the visitors information center. And that visitors information center, you'll be able to interact with the screen. What you want to do, you spoke about Amangina. Maybe you are the person who'd read somewhere, which Amangina was a Jose Amnandi. Where do I go to? And you go to our visitors information center and you get all of that. So what we want to do is create experiences for people who come to the country. It's not just about the G20 Leaders Summit. Of course, it's being launched now ahead of the G20 Leaders Summit, but it's a structure that will remain there throughout the many years to come. And maybe will become better as well.
Tell us, after this G20 summit, will this app continue?
Definitely. The structure will remain there. We'll improve on the structure as well. The minister will give more details around what else it is that we'll be adding on. And maybe the other airports as well. If we find that this is actually something that works, maybe those other airports will get a similar smart visitors information center.
South Africa is the host of the G20 Leaders Summit. What does this mean for tourism?
You know, when somebody asked me this question yesterday, I said, imagine when you take a picture. When you take a picture with our beautiful landscape in your background, in the background of that picture, we know, as a matter of fact, that that picture does not just remain in South Africa. That's a picture that will go across the world. If you think about the G20 leaders, the officials that they are traveling with, the pictures that they will be sending, those pictures will be traveling throughout social media. And we will be leveraging on that, because that is what we have to offer. And what we hope to get from this experience as well is that people would maybe say that I want to stay longer. But if they don't want to stay longer, I want to come back. And that's what we're offering.
Your message to tourists?
My message to tourists. Can I start with my message to South Africans, first of all, yeah? I want to start with South Africans. First of all, thank you so much. Thank you so much for welcoming our visitors with warm arms and with warm smiles as well. Because when you speak to tourists and you ask them about the experience about South Africa, the first thing that they'll tell you is the people. It's the people of South Africa. And that is our most precious asset. That is the people of South Africa. To the tourists, we are saying, welcome to South Africa. Don't just stop in Gauteng, go to Limpopo, go to Mpumalanga, go to KwaZulu-Natal, go to the Eastern Cape, go to the Northern Cape. We have a lot to offer, and this visitor center is going to give you that, but also stay longer.
Let me simplify this, Eldrin. Let's say I'm coming from England.
Yeah.
I don't know South Africa. I've never been here.
Okay.
And I come in here. You are telling me that there's Soweto. You're telling me that there's Alexandra. Mm-hmm. How do I maneuver?
Okay, so you arrive, you land. OR Tambo is greeting you. The statue is greeting you. You go to the visitors information center. You will be welcomed by at least up to six people. Say, welcome, Calvin. Welcome. Possibly not the accent. They were like, welcome, mate. So you will not get the accent. The person then welcomes you. You then tell them that, listen, I've read up about Soweto and I've read up about Alexandra. Can you please assist me? I want to go to those areas. And we will try to connect you with some of the tour operators as well. They will give you that specific experience. Or maybe you are part of those who say that I want to travel alone. You can grab an Uber, you can grab a taxi and go experience Alexandra or Soweto on your own.
From tourism side, do you think we are ready as the city of Johannesburg and Gauteng and South Africa to host this global summit?
We were born ready. As South Africa being part of the founding members of the G20, we were born ready for this moment, and this is our moment to shine. Yes, people are speaking about some of the infrastructure issues that have been raised before, and the government has been trying to deal with that. And we know with the city of Johannesburg as well, they have come in and said that, listen, what are some of the things that we can fix, but we're not necessarily fixing them just for the G20, but also for citizens beyond the G20 to still continue to enjoy. And I'm sure you've seen the pictures of the CBD in Johannesburg and how clean the CBD is looking. A lot of people are welcoming that. And those are some of the initiatives, of course, that come as the G20 is here, but that stays with us beyond the G20. And that's what we're hoping for.
Meanwhile, the African scientists have partnered up with China in order to boost food security.
This is Hainan, where winter brings not just tourists, but also agricultural researchers. Among them is soybean expert Dr. Han Tianfu.
My baby is 1 year old.
He's developed an unusually tall soybean variety, and is showing it to his colleague, Dr. Felix Dokora, who's always thinking, how could this be applied in Africa?
Me coming from Africa, the most important question is food security. Why can't we feed ourselves? We have the soil, we have the land. What is the problem?
One problem is the lack of research infrastructure. Here in Sanya, Dr. Dokora shows his African students what's possible with China's advanced equipment.
Techniques allow you to ask certain fundamental questions.
These resources could be a game changer for scientists like this young researcher from Zimbabwe.
So if you look at our country, it might take about 7 to 8 years to have a rice variety. And when you reach that 8 years, probably the problem that you're breeding for, it won't be relevant at the time. But if you look at China, they have accelerated methods, which means you get your rice variety to address the problem that you have in a shorter period. So when you get the variety, it will be able to address the problem at the time.
These labs are just one of many such facilities at Yazhou Bay Science and Technology City. What was once a seasonal winter breeding ground has been transformed into a year-round research hub that's been tasked to become the country's Silicon Valley of seeds. Progress made here can increase yield across China and beyond.
China and Africa can work together, can produce soybeans to feed their own people, and they export soybeans to China. Okay? Now I can get money to reduce poverty. China can get stable and diverse soybean supply. That is a win-win collaboration.
In Ghana, CGTN meets Dr. Enoch Sapi, who studied soybean breeding with Professor Han in Sanya.
In 2017, I had a Chinese government scholarship to study in China, Chinese Agriculture Academy of Sciences. The reason why I went to Sanya is that Sanya provided an ideal environment to screen genotypes that are adapted to tropical regions like Ghana or in Africa. It was a wonderful experience, and it's been helpful, especially setting up field trials and then field data collection. It's been of help in my oil palm breeding work here in Ghana.
Oil palm is one of Ghana's most important cash crop, crucial to rural livelihoods and the national economy. But the equipment gap remains a challenge.
In Ghana, in the oil palm research, we lack those facilities. For instance, we don't have a function, we don't have a molecular laboratory. We don't have funds for most of our research work. So that's the hindrance over here. So most of the work we do here is food work.
Back in Sanya, Dr. Dokora has a clear-eyed view of what collaboration can and cannot achieve.
China them from behind can keep providing support. But it's Africa's cry. It's Africa's problem.
African scientists hope that their countries will catch up. And for now, they're investing in the partnership with China, learning the language and planting seeds for long-lasting relationship that start here in Hainan. Chen Mengfei, CGTN, Yazhou.
China and Zambia have reinforced long-standing bilateral ties.
The diplomatic ties between China and Zambia started back in 1964, right after Zambia won its independence. Back then, China helped Zambia build the Tazara Railway, a huge project that gave the southern African country a vital link to the sea. Zambia's founding leader, Kenneth Kaunda, famously branded China an all-weather friend, a reliable ally that provided crucial support during the anti-colonial struggle.
The investment is enormous. Like just a few months ago, the fertilizer plant, $300 million, was being commissioned, thereby making Zambia a net exporter of fertilizers for the first time.
Most recently, high-level visits have upgraded the relationship to a comprehensive strategic and cooperative partnership. This means a much deeper collaboration spanning everything from debt resolution to new green technology. A crucial part of this push is trade. China recently opened its enormous market of 1.4 billion consumers by removing all tariffs on Zambian exports.
This coming up in 2024 has translated to the growth in terms of the bilateral trade between the two countries, which has increased to almost like $4 billion US dollars just from the time the zero tariff schedule was implemented.
The partnership, which is evolving, has been dominated by large-scale infrastructure and industrial projects, many falling under China's Belt and Road Initiative. The Kafue Gorge Lower Hydropower Project, built by Chinese contractors, has significantly boosted Zambia's electricity generation capacity. Another key project is the new Simon Mwansa Kapwepwe International Airport, engineered and constructed by the Aviation Industry Corporation of China. But this partnership is also shifting gears. It's moving past its roots to focus on something more vital, value addition. Experts say the new goal is simple: helping Zambians turn their raw materials into finished products before they leave the country. This means more jobs, more local factories, and more economic stability. And the focus is also increasingly green. China is working with Zambia to boost its clean energy supply with new solar technology, reducing the country's reliance on hydropower. Daniel Arap Moy, CGTN.
Meanwhile, the United Nations has urged the immediate release of the abducted Nigerian schoolgirls.
It was from this school in the town of Maga in Nigeria's northwestern Kebbi state that at least 25 young girls were kidnapped on Monday. Armed men killed a teacher during this latest attack, targeting school children in the region over the past decade. The United Nations has condemned the incident and called for their swift release.
In a statement, the UN Children's Fund stressed that this tragic incident is yet another stark reminder of the urgent need to protect children, schools, and the personnel they rely upon to learn safely. UNICEF underscored that it continues to work with government partners, civil society, and communities to strengthen child protection systems and promote safe, inclusive learning environments across Nigeria. But these systems must be enforced to prevent future tragedies. The agency also calls for those responsible for this incident to be held to account in accordance with national and international standards.
Attacks and the abduction of students remains a major barrier to learning in Nigeria. A UNICEF report last year found that only 37% of schools across 10 states have early warning systems to detect security threats.
Meanwhile, Togo's animation studio aims to put Africa on the global screen.
In Lomé, Togo, a new face is emerging in the world of animated cinema, Aruka Studio. On a continent where animation is still often seen as a niche field, Aruka is on a mission to tell stories rooted in Africa, created by Africans, for audiences both at home and around the world.
We created Aruka Studio in Togo, I would say naturally because we are Togolese, that's where it all started.
The idea of building an animation studio also came from the lack of such structures on the continent, especially on our own country. Our vision from the beginning was to create African content for Africans, those on the continent, those in the diaspora, but also for anyone else who wants to discover our stories.
At Aruka Studio, ambition runs high, but reality sets the limits. A 90-minute feature often requires hundreds of people, 2 years of work, and powerful equipment. Here, the team is small, resources are limited, but the determination is unwavering. From myths to contemporary tales, the studio seeks to create narratives that resonate with young Africans and audiences abroad.
My personal dream for my country is to stay here and fully develop animation to the point where we can compete with the global giants, because right now there is almost no African content on screen, and if we don't create it ourselves, there will simply be nothing to see of Africa.
Animation is not just art or business, it's a tool for representation, giving young Africans characters they can identify with and worlds they can recognize. With a young tech-savvy connected youth, eager for original content, local audiences are ready for African animation.
Yes, there are challenges, but there's also talent, demand, and above all, endless stories to tell. I'm sure the future will be bright if we keep working hard and investing in our craft. For me, bringing an African character to life means giving young Africans something they can relate to. In most foreign productions, black characters are rarely portrayed in a way that truly reflects who we are. That's why representation matters.
African animation is only at the beginning of its journey, but studios like Aruka show that the continent can tell its own stories, create its own characters, and invite the world to dream in African images. Beryl Oro, CGTN.
Meanwhile, the UK overhauls asylum system amid rising migration concerns.
The UK government has unveiled sweeping changes to its asylum system. The aim, authorities say, is simple: stop irregular migration. The country is one of the most preferred destinations for illegal migrants, many who risk their lives crossing the English Channel on overloaded boats just to reach its shores. These new measures are expected to have far and wide-reaching effects on UK immigration control. The plan, among other things, cuts long-standing protections for refugees.
We will now also remove the 2005 legislation that created a duty to support asylum seekers, reverting to a legal power to do so instead. While we will continue to support those who play by the rules, those who do not, be that through criminality or antisocial behaviour, can have their support removed.
The changes also threaten to deny visas to people from countries which have refused to take back irregular migrants deported by the UK. The Interior Ministry has listed Angola, Namibia, and the Democratic Republic of Congo as possible first targets. Other nations could also face restrictions, especially those whose citizens file high numbers of asylum claims. Asylum requests in the UK are now at record levels. There were more than 111,000 in the year to June 2025, according to official figures. Yet authorities granted fewer positive responses to asylum applicants last year than they did in 2023. Now they plan to reduce approvals even further. Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood says the new system will discourage channel crossings.
The pace and scale of change has destabilized communities. It is making our country a more divided place. There will never be a justification for the violence and racism of a minority. But if we fail to deal with this crisis, we will draw more people down a path that starts with anger and ends in hatred.
Under the new rules, refugee status becomes temporary. It will be reviewed every 30 months. Refugees could be sent home once their countries are deemed safe. For an asylum seeker or refugee to get permanent UK residency, they may have to wait for up to 20 years for that to be granted, as opposed to the initial 5 years. Children also could be removed from the country under the new rules.
Outside of the most exceptional circumstances, family reunion will not be possible, with a refugee only able to bring family over if they have joined a work and study route and if qualifying tests are met.
The government says this is about restoring control. The announcement has, however, set off a political debate.
If it gives sentiment in the UK, I'd step towards a viable solution, but I don't know if doing these measures without any, without showing effective step-by-step validated by moral compass is an effective way.
It sounds rather unfair, and that's basically all I can say.
The Refugee Council has warned the reforms won't stop dangerous sea crossings. It says refugees who build new lives in the UK should be allowed to stay. Official data shows more than 39,000 people have crossed the sea into the UK on small boats so far this year. By March this year, more than 106,000 asylum seekers relied on British government support just to get by. The proposals now move to a public consultation phase, and the government says more legislation will follow in the coming months. But the debate over how far the government should go on this issue is far from over. Joy Kirukijuma, CGTN.
CGTN's Chris Ochimringa brings us some reactions to the UK's tightening of asylum policies in the DRC, Angola, and Namibia.
Well, there's been no official reaction from the Democratic Republic of Congo about this decision by the UK to impose visa bans. We expect the authorities to be internalizing this statement and issue an official reaction anytime soon. What we know is that the DRC has quite a large population of people in the UK. According to a census that was carried out in 2021, there were about more than 20,000 people who said they were born in the DRC, living in the UK. So we're waiting for an official communication. We haven't heard from Angola as well, any official communication from there, but there is a former diplomat of Namibia who has reacted to this decision by the UK Secretary of State, Shabana Mahmood, saying that this decision is more to do with the UK's domestic politics rather than the transgressions that have been committed by their people, Namibians who are living in the UK. As he said, there are many people who are living quite peacefully in the UK, and that the UK government under the Labour administration is currently facing a lot of economic, political challenges. There is a lot of anti-immigrant rhetoric coming from the people, and the government has decided to kind of appease the people by targeting these three countries. He said that if the UK government carries out this threat to impose bans, they will reciprocate by also issuing bans on UK citizens entering the country. This is something they have done before with the United States when President Trump's administration issued a number of visa restrictions on African countries.
President Donald Trump defends MBS, Epstein files in crypto.
Hi, I'm Kim Vanell in Whanganui, New Zealand. Trump said the Crown Prince did nothing wrong. Journalists question. President Trump said the Crown Prince did nothing wrong.
Things happen, but he knew nothing about it, and we can leave it at that. You don't have to embarrass our guest by asking a question like that.
It was just yes, Mr. President.
Khashoggi, who was based in the U.S., was killed and then dismembered inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in 2018. U.S. intelligence found the Crown Prince himself had approved the journalist's capture or killing. Trump says Khashoggi had enemies.
Phenomenal job. You're mentioning somebody that was extremely controversial. A lot of people didn't like that gentleman that you're talking about. Whether you like it,
the visit marks a high point for Saudi-U.S. ties, with Trump designating Saudi Arabia a major non-NATO ally, granting military and economic privileges. Mohammed bin Salman was effusive in his praise of the president.
We believe in the future of the United States of America. We believe in what you're doing, Mr. President, really creating a lot of good things and good foundation to create more economical growth, more business in America.
Later, Trump hosted an elaborate dinner for the Crown Prince. With high-profile guests, including CEOs from Chevron, Qualcomm, and Pfizer, footballer Cristiano Ronaldo, and Elon Musk, who returned to the White House for the first time since his falling out with Trump. And in terms of deals, Trump and Mohammed bin Salman agreed on arms sales, civil nuclear cooperation, artificial intelligence, and critical minerals. Deputy Foreign Policy Editor Humaira Pamuk has more.
Aside from Khashoggi, the conversation focused on a lot of investments. We have seen President Trump visibly excited when MBS increased his country's pledge of investment right there in the Oval Office.
I believe, Mr. President, in the, today and tomorrow we're going to announce that we are going to increase that that $600 billion to almost $1 trillion of investment, real investment and real opportunity by details in many areas.
But probably the most important deliverable from this meeting is the sale of F-35 jets to Saudi Arabia, something the kingdom has been seeking for quite a long time. Now, the tricky thing there is whether or not Washington sells the same aircraft that it sold to Israel, because that's going to be really important in terms of preserving Israel's qualitative military edge in the Middle East. And President Trump indicated that indeed the kingdom was probably going to get the same F-35s that Israel was getting. So we're going to have to see how that turns out.
President Trump also gave details on the plan for Gaza, saying the Board of Peace, which will oversee a transitional government, will include heads of, quote, all the major countries. He also says the Saudi Crown Prince gave a positive response to joining the Abraham Accords. That's Trump's effort to get Arab countries to normalize relations with Israel. But Mohammed bin Salman didn't completely commit.
And we want to be part of the Abraham Accord, but we want also to be sure that we secure a clear path of two-state solution.
A two-state solution, recognizing both Israel and a Palestinian
care
state,
that
is something Israel remains.
That's the rollover benefit from NHB. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account for your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHB, we're about you.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Reading News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonala Dingi program brought to you by Loisi Shimi.